Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Sharif Jackson. Sharif, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Scott. Thank you so much for having me on, man. Let's talk Trek.
Oh, we're going to talk Trek, man. Yes. But first, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself? How might people know you?
Sure. So my work is out on a couple avenues. I do a science blog called Science Looks Good. I do a gaming YouTube series called Gaming Looks Good. And I also do a podcast called Operation Cubicle, and those are all available at sharifjackson.com. So if you've worked with any of those brands, or if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook or like whatever, which is all under Sharif Jackson, then hi.
Well, hello. Now, Sharif, I think I know the answer to this question already, but I have to ask it. Do you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I do consider myself a Star Trek fan. I don't quite consider myself a Trekkie per se, because I don't have a encyclopedic knowledge of the universe, but the ones I like, I definitely like a lot. And I definitely grew up watching Star Trek, and you know, and I've enjoyed everything from the original series to the J.J. Abrams movies, so...
You know. And the J.J. Abrams movies, for some reason I don't understand, are very controversial amongst the rabid Star Trek fans. I guess I do understand, just because they change so much that people freak out about them. I have gone on record as liking them, but...
Yeah, I mean, I knew what I was getting. Like, Abrams... Like there's no mystery as to how he likes to make movies. So I knew that when he was taking this series over that he was going to make these into Star Wars type action movies, and I was okay with that because it's introducing it to a new audience, and you know I don't have any problem with them at all. No, I just accept that they're in their own universe.
That's right. And I think it was very clever that he decided to kind of split the universes. So he's basically resetting it, but it's a different branch of reality. So all the other Star Trek you know and love still exists, even though it would anyway, since these are fictional things. But there's a new branch of reality where all this other wacky stuff is happening.
Yep.
So everybody calm down, is what I'm saying. Now, if you had to pick a favorite series, what series would you pick?
I would go The Next Generation, not only because that's the one that really got me into Star Trek, because the original series didn't really get me into it, but TNG definitely did. And I think it's mainly because I think it had the best team of supporting characters out of a Star Trek. While there are other captains that I've liked better than Picard, I think that the team was just the best, you know? And I think I would argue even more iconic than the original series team, just in terms of like how developed they were, how nuanced their storylines were. Like I fell in love with them even more so than I fell in love with Picard. So that series definitely holds a special place in my heart.
That is a bold statement, that the holy trinity of Kirk, is. Spock, and McCoy have been overshadowed by Picard, Riker, and Data, I suppose, would be the three analogs to those characters.
It is a very bold statement, but that is how I feel. How I feel.
Hey, man, as I say, I judge no one's fandom, but I think you are right in that the three main characters of the original series, I think, were fairly well fleshed out. And the three main characters of TNG, I would guess Data, Riker, and Picard would be the three main characters, are fleshed out as well. But the strength of TNG is that the supporting characters also are much are fleshed out, whereas in the original series, not so much.
Exactly. And I'm like a huge fan of... Geordi and Worf, and I think that they might as well have been part of that main character list that you gave, because they were incredible. And I liked kind of like having a Klingon there and like dealing with like all that, and yeah, it was even like Troy and Crusher and stuff, like they kind of really delved into these characters, and like I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and plus they had four more seasons than the original series did to look into the other characters, so they had an advantage there. But I love Next Generation as well, so I will not argue that at all. Although you did say something that was intriguing to me. You said that there are other captains you like better than Picard. So
yes.
So what captains do you like better than Picard?
Well, I do like Kirk better than Picard if I had to pick. And the other ones are pretty close. I'm actually a huge fan of Janeway, which I know a lot of people are not. Mm-hmm. But Voyager is my, is also one of my top series. And, you know, the relationship between her and Seven of Nine, I thought was just so superbly done. And it really made her, it made her a mother figure without the negatives of that trope, right? So, like, it didn't make her, like, whiny or overly emotional or, like, those kind of things, but they still showed, like, the caring and, like, all that stuff, all the positive things that, like, you associate with a female leader without some of the negative things that like, you see in a lot of other movies and books and stuff. So I'm really big on Janeway as well.
So when I started this podcast, I was not a huge Janeway fan, mostly because I hadn't really revisited Voyager in years, because I watched the first season, maybe season and a half, and I watched a bunch of other episodes as well, but that first season and a half did not really work for me. And so I kind of wrote off Voyager. But having rewatched now a number of Voyager episodes for this very podcast, I have found that while I still have many problems with Voyager as a TV show, Captain Janeway is not one of those problems. Seven of Nine certainly is not one of those problems, and their relationship is fantastic. And it's kind of similar to, well, not really, but I mean, in that there's a familial kind of, quote-unquote familial relationship. The only other captain that has an actual familial relationship that we see is Captain Sisko, who is a commander in the episode we're watching. But eventually he becomes captain.
Yes.
And he actually has, obviously, his son lives with him. So that is always interesting. And I always found that interesting with Sisko's character, that he is the only captain who seemingly has had time to have a family, with tragic results in that his wife was killed. But, Jake is around and they hang out and they have a very good relationship. So that's always nice to see.
Yep.
And that was my way of trying to segue into the fact that we are here to talk about a Deep Space Nine episode, actually two Deep Space Nine episodes, because one of the other rules of Random Trek is that if the random episode machine picks a two-part episode, we have to watch both episodes and discuss them, because you can't really discuss one part of a two-parter and not the other. Deep Space Nine is troublesome because they started these story arcs, so this is a two-part episode, but really it's the second third of a three-part episode, which was the season two finale, and then these are the season three opener, and then the conclusion. But we only watched the Search Part 1 and the Search Part 2, which is season three, episodes 1 and 2, for people keeping track at home.
Yes.
So Sharif, what are your thoughts about Deep Space Nine?
I kind of did what you did, was the opposite. I got really into Voyager and kind of wrote off Deep Space Nine.
Really?
When it was on, mainly because I could not stand the idea of a Star Trek series in a space station. I was one of those people. Mm-hmm. That was like, I want to explore and I want to do all this. So, even though, they had a black captain, which was, a huge draw for me being African-American. I watched a few episodes of the first season and it was interesting, but it didn't really hook me. Mm-hmm. But when I rediscovered it via the early years of like Netflix and like all that stuff, the later series has some of the best Star Trek writing, bar none, of Deep Space Nine. I think they get really, really good. I think that, you know, this episode is one of the early ones that kind of starts off that like arc of just really, really interesting plot lines, that don't seem kind of forced or like hackneyed together. So, I hold Deep Space Nine in pretty high regard now from a writing perspective. And also from an acting perspective, I think that the acting itself is pretty improved over some of the earlier series. But it does take a while to get into it for me, at least. I thought that the first two seasons, I'd say the first season and a half maybe, are not that interesting. But once it gets going, it gets going.
Yeah, and I can totally understand that. I remember people were quite upset that there was no spaceship or starship, I guess, in Star Trek parlance, in Deep Space Nine. And people were like, but it's named Star Trek, not Star Station. You should be out trekking.
Star Stay.
Right, exactly. Don't stay. Go out. And in fact, this episode, this two-parter episode, solves this very problem by introducing the Defiant into Deep Space Nine. So Commander Sisko gets a ship. Which is exciting, and it allows them to go off and explore various places.
And just an excellent reveal of the ship.
Oh, man.
Like, I thought that was just really well done.
So, the Defiant is one of my favorite starships, because it is so different than any other Star Trek starship, or any Federation starship, I should say, that we had seen before. And the way they unveil it, I think, plays up that fact, right? Because you're like, what the heck is that thing? It looks unlike any other starship we have ever seen. And it has a cloaking device, which is crazy.
Yeah, and Sisko basically says, like, yo, this was designed for one thing, to fight Borg. Like, that's it.
To blow up the Borg. Yeah, there's a scene where he explains, this ship does not have, there will be no families on it. It doesn't have any science labs. It has no comforts. It has overpowered engines, it can go really fast, and it has lots of weapons. And the first time, they apparently didn't put it into production because when they were testing it out, it almost ripped itself apart because the engines are so overpowered, which seems like a big flaw in the design, but...
Yeah, I honestly think that it just shows how the Federation just does not know how to make straight up battleships. Like, they just don't, you know, because they're more about, you know, peace, really. So like that, I think that while it's cool that they got the cloaking, it like also showed that they have a long way to go if they ever wanted to become like a straight up battle force. And, you know, they just don't seem to have the expertise to do it at this stage, at least.
Right. And I think they don't have the expertise or really the will to do it, right? Because they built the Defiant because the Borg was a big threat. The Borg had invaded Earth a couple times, and they were kind of like, well, maybe we should think about upping our game here with our ships. And so the Defiant was born. But then, as Sisko explains in this episode, the Borg threat lessened, and they were like, let's just go back to exploring. It is unclear how Sisko knows about the Defiant, though, because he requests it, and it seems like it would be like a secret project, but he just seems to know about it, and the Federation gives it to him, and they're like, good luck, Sisko.
They're like, here, take it.
Exactly. It seems odd. Oh, and also they give him a Romulan to operate the cloaking device.
Yes. Because we don't know crap about cloaking, man. We just don't.
That's right. You know, the last time the Federation tried to make a cloaked ship, it ended up in the middle of an asteroid. So you need a Romulan to supervise, or else bad things happen. The other shocking thing about the Defiant, and then we can move on to actual people as opposed to ships, is when they show that it gets into a fight with a bunch of Jem'Hadar ships, and they show it firing for the first time, and it fires its phasers unlike any other Starfleet ship you've ever seen. So I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, whoa, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really impressive ship. And, like, I think that it's really visually stunning, too. And I think that that is one thing that Deep Space Nine did do better than a lot of the other Star Trek series was just the, you know, and, like, I don't know if that was because of the budget of the series or, like, something like that, but just the visual spectacle, I thought, was that the production quality seemed pretty high.
I agree. And although, you know, they play up the Defiant a lot and in the episode, and then it is pretty thoroughly smashed by a couple of Jem'Hadar ships. But I think that that scene where there's the battle, there's a big battle between a couple of Jem'Hadar ships and the Defiant, is fantastic. It is one of the most intense Star Trek battle scenes I have ever seen. And I had to completely forget about it. Somebody dies, you know, things are blowing up. They have like the, like maybe they're using a handy cam or something. I don't know what they're using, but it's a very, visceral. There's, you know, it's dark. Deep Space Nine is always a little darker, like literally darker than any other Star Trek episode, show. And that helps with that. Cause, you know, I felt like I love TNG. But the battle scenes on The Next Generation were not that exciting.
Yeah. it's not like, I mean, like the coolest thing about like the battle scenes were like just the scenes with the Borg, really.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, yeah, it's like not something that I watched for like spectacular battle scenes.
No, they shook the camera. Actors leaned in you know, together, but it didn't have that dramatic oomph that I feel this episode has with that battle. So fantastic. Now I was surprised, like I vaguely remembered this episode after I sent you the email.
Interesting. I
have a bad memory for everything. I spent one episode of Voyager, where we were discussing an episode of Voyager, calling Chakotay Chipotle. So that shows you how good my memory is.
Really?
Well, once you say it the first time, it's, you're just, all hope is lost.
well, what really matters is if he's a steak, a chicken, or a barbacoa, or like a little mix. That's what really matters.
That's true. I would think that if Chakotay were a Chipotle burrito, I think he would be vegetarian, right?
I think we have a new Star Trek spinoff series in the making.
I think so. And an obvious sponsor built right in. Chipotle or Chakotay. Give me a call. Let's talk. But this episode, I remembered it obviously because this three arc episode is important, right? Because this is the first time that they're getting a taste of the Dominion, and we find out who the founders are.
Yep.
And I had forgotten that they didn't know who the founders were, and that the Vorta pretended to be the founders for a while. So a lot happens, right? And I also forgot that both of these episodes are really, I mean, there's lots of stuff happening, but I feel like the kernel of both episodes revolves around Odo.
Yes, absolutely. It's his journey. Well, like, I don't know how much we want to go into the later part of it, but
we can, no chronological order here.
But yeah, I agree that like the central arc is, you know, while you know, and like not only Sisko's team, but the Star Trek ethos in general is to, you know, leave your home and go discover the universe. Uh-huh. You have Odo, who's been drawn mysteriously to this rogue planet, and he's not sure why. And then he finds out that even though he was drawn to go home, he was actually designed to be a Voyager, basically.
That's true. You know?
So like, it was this really cool kind of like double meaning where I remember when I first watched this, I thought like, okay, I see how they're like a setting up how like he's looking for home and like everybody else is not, but in reality they sent him out to look for, you know, to discover the universe. So like he does fit in with the rest of the crew, and like that's why that he says like I'm linked with these people. So like that's kind of an example of like some of the writing and the plot lines that I think they really hit a home run on in DS9.
And I think the character of Odo is just one of my favorite characters in Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine is my favorite series, so I have a raft of characters that I like in Deep Space Nine. I like Sisko. I like O'Brien. I like Garrick, Dax, Kira. Basically, the only person I don't really like on Deep Space Nine is Bashir. So maybe it would be easier just to list him. But even him, he's okay. He's no Neelix.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of O'Brien, to be honest.
Why not?
But I do love Kira, though.
Oh, Kira's great. And Kira and Odo together in any scene, and that's really all you need, I think. They just have such a great relationship, and it matures over the course of 7 seasons, and it's just something really great to watch. But Odo is a character that, much like Data or Spock, is a character who is out of place. He feels alone, right? He's searching for – he's not sure even what his species is. Odo, I feel, has a slightly more tragic character than Spock or Data, certainly up until – for the first 2 seasons, because he has no idea who – if he's the only – one of his race. Was kept in a lab for many years. So not a happy guy, this Odo.
Yeah. And like I found a very interesting part where he basically implied that he was embarrassed to go into his liquid form in front of people. So like, even though this was like this innate part of who he was, he still kind of harbored some embarrassment, I think, because he saw himself as some experiment, because he wasn't even sure if he was the representative of a race or anything. Like he just could have been just like cooked up in a lab or something.
Right. And so because he was in like a Bajoran lab for a long time, and the outfit he wears was modeled on the researcher who researched him for many years. And that was a great scene that you're talking about. So Odo, he ends up on the Defiant. Quark also ends up on the Defiant for no particular reason, really. They have a reason, but it's kind of flimsy. And of course, there are not a lot of quarters on the Defiant. And so Odo and Quark have to be roommates, cue the Odd Couple music. And that's another great relationship, right, of Odo and Quark, because they are, I feel like, similar characters, but with opposite goals, perhaps, if that makes sense, in that, they make a lot of point in this episode to talk about how Odo has his own methods, and he's not a team player, and he doesn't care about, the chain of command and following regulations. And those same characteristics can be applied to Quark. But whereas Odo uses his kind of drive to uphold the law, and he has a rigid moral code, Quark, not so much.
Not at all.
That's right. And so whenever Quark and Odo are in a scene together, it is quite amusing. And in this scene, these two episodes feature for the first, I don't know, I would say 70% of the two, a very angry Odo. He has been basically demoted because there's this new kind of smarmy Starfleet security dude who's taking over all security matters on Deep Space Nine that relate to Starfleet. And Odo can still handle station security matters, but if there's anything that interacts with Starfleet, he has to liaison with this new Starfleet officer guy.
Yeah.
Odo's not a big fan of this new setup.
He's kind of not a fan of like having to depend on anyone. I feel like he just wants to kind of do everything himself, because he kind of thinks that if like something goes wrong, that they're just going to blame him for being a shapeshifter. So he kind of like he really has a bit of an identity crisis, and like I think that kind of drives him away from collaborating with people.
Right, and he has a problem trusting people too, I think, because he thinks that everybody is either frightened of him because he's a changeling, or just wants him to kind of perform for him, for them, I should say. So they want to see him shapeshift and, you know, do a trick for them, and that's all that they care about. He's a curiosity, not a person, right?
Yes. That's a great way of putting it, actually. Yeah.
And so that is central to his character, and all of his kind of rage in this episode, I think, comes from that kind of that central theme. And there's a great scene where Sisko tells Odo – well, actually, Sisko doesn't tell Odo. Odo, the new security officer, comes in. Odo, kind of, you know, not being stupid, can see where the wind is blowing. And he says to Sisko, I'll save you the trouble. I'm going to resign.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very West Wing-ish kind of scene. You know, it was like all those movies where, like, the VP or the secretary of, like, state is like, well, my resignation will be on your desk in the morning. it like totally reminded me of, like, those shows. It was great.
Yeah, and you would think that he could probably do his resignation a little faster. Just get a pad, do it, send an email, it's done.
Well, like, I think that he, like, has to think of something really snarky to put in the resignation, yeah?
That's true. That takes time to craft very barbed resignation letter. And you know, you don't want to be on the end of any barbed emails from Odo. He's pretty good at putting people in their places. And that leads to an interesting part where, you know, Odo storms out of the room. Sisko is like, ugh, and runs after him because, you know, he likes Odo. He thinks of Odo as his friend, even though Odo has a very difficult time thinking of anybody as his friend. And he runs after Odo and he's like, Odo, you know, I argued for you. I didn't want this to happen. But, you know, Starfleet security was adamant. And he's like, oh, this is because they just wanted someone that they could trust. Because I'm a shapeshifter. Sisko is like, no, this is not a racial thing. This is just because you're not a team player. You don't follow the chain of command, all these things. And I just thought that was an interesting kind of moment to show that, you know, Odo has a lot going on in his mind, and he's a very complicated character.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about the anger as well. Like, I don't even know if it's... Well, it is anger, but it's not like he's just like an asshole, you know. It like comes from a very specific place, and it's kind of a mix of like confusion and you know just sort of frustration, you know. So I do think it's a bit of a tragedy because you do feel really bad for. Well, I felt bad for him at least.
Oh, I feel bad. I felt bad for him, especially obviously this whole episode is designed to heighten Odo and make you feel bad for him because he's all alone, he's losing. You know, the one thing that is constant in Odo's life for many years is that he has been the constable of Deep Space Nine. It doesn't matter who's in charge of Deep Space Nine, the Cardassians, Starfleet, he has been a constant. He kind of makes sure that justice is being served as well as he can under, you know, whatever bureaucratic organization of the day is there. And now that has been taken away from him. So not only is he the only person of his race that he knows of, and like you said, he doesn't even know if he is a member of a race. He might just be some kind of experiment. He doesn't know anything, right? So,
yep.
And the only thing that gives him any value or kind of moors him in any way has been taken away from him. So of course he's going to be angry. And you could totally understand that. And people, Kira especially, is like, Odo, I'm your friend, and I want to, you know, help you out. So I talked to the Bajoran government, and they want you to be, like, their representative on this little trip we're taking to the Alpha Quadrant or the Gamma, whatever quadrant. I always get these quadrants mixed
up. Yeah, so it's the Gamma Quadrant. Okay. They're all from the Alpha Quadrant.
That's right.
But the Dominion's in the Gamma Quadrant.
I've gotten some emails about that. To which I respond, I'm sorry, I misnamed a fictional quadrant of space.
Obviously, you didn't study hard enough in physics class when you were learning about the different quadrants of the universe.
It's true. I failed out of stellar cartography. So anyway, they have to go to the Gamma Quadrant to check out. Well, basically, they're going on a mission of peace because that's what the Starfleet does, right? They want to go out into the Gamma Quadrant and they want to find the founders, because nobody knows who the founders are, but they do know they're in charge of the Dominion. They want to find them and say, basically, listen, we can coexist. There's no need for us all to get into a big fight. There's plenty of space everywhere. We'll welcome you to the Alpha Quadrant. We can have a trade deal. Everything will be great. That's their plan. And so Kira's like, oh, Odo doesn't have a job anymore. He's kind of bummed. I'll do him a solid, haha, get it, and get him to be a Bajoran liaison. He can come on the mission. Odo doesn't really react well to this.
Yeah, he is not a fan of this at all.
No. And he, this is, I think, another part of Odo. You know, he can't, certainly in the early seasons, and this is obviously one of them, he has a very difficult time with relationships and figuring out that people are his friend and just want to look out for his well-being and aren't like pitying him, but just want to help him out.
Well, I think it's actually a little more than that. I think it's more that he's scared of being used.
Oh.
Like, and I think that kind of goes into that thought of him being an experiment, that he thinks that he'll be like basically either bait or like just like kind of thrown out there. And like, if the going gets like tough, it's like, oh, well, we lost that experiment. Let's go make another one. You know, so like, I really think that he really thinks that people are just going to use him and not really care about him as a being, mm-hmm. and really see him more as a thing.
Right. And that's why he has such a hard time. He can't even think that someone wants to be his friend. He just assumes that they're, and I think that's a very astute observation, that they want to use him as a tool and not like, you know, they just want him to be, you know, because, you know, Starfleet, and Kira's not in Starfleet, but Starfleet's all about being a team member and everybody contributes something and everybody's important, right? So that's a very like a kumbaya kind of thing, and they want Odo to be part of that, and Odo is not a kumbaya kind of guy.
Nope.
I think that's the understatement of this episode. And this is all of this started because you mentioned the point where he and Quark are sharing the bunk, and he doesn't want to change into his liquid form in front of Quark. And I think that's a great scene that sums up all of this. It's got everything. It's got angry Odo. It's got a kind of weaselly Quark. And it sums up their relationship so well. But Odo has been in his form for so long, he needs to get into liquid form so he can rest in his bucket. But he doesn't want Quark to gawk at him, and watch him and just as a spectacle. And you know, you could say a lot of things about Quark. I like Quark as a character. He has very few redeeming characteristics. But in the end of it, he's always a true friend, at least in his own way. So he does turn away because he understands what's going on. Of course, he gives Odo a hard time because that's what Quark does. But he does turn away and he understands that it's a private moment. Which is nice.
I don't want to give Quark too much credit here. I don't know. I think that if he saw in a second that there was some way that he could exploit this, that he would.
Oh, well, totally. That goes without saying. If there's some GoPress Latinum to be made from Odo transforming into liquid, Quark would figure it out. That's why we all like Quark, or we all hate Quark, depending on your Quark.
Yeah, it's a very love-hate kind of character.
But Quark has a very small role in this episode. Basically, he serves to have that scene, and then he serves to get some information to move the plot along so that they can find this relay station and figure out where the founders are, and then everything goes downhill from there, with Quark skedaddling back to the Alpha Quadrant as quickly as possible. Although Quark does have maybe the best line in this episode, when Sisko basically forces Quark to come along with him. Quark is like, Rom should really go. He just has a son to worry about. I have a business.
Yeah, that is classic Quark right there.
Exactly.
Classic Quark, yeah.
I laughed when I heard that. So let's stay with Odo, though. So Odo, there's a bunch of stuff that happens. So Odo sees this star chart, basically, and he sees this nebula, which name I cannot remember. And he comes kind of obsessed with this nebula in very short order.
Yes, it is funny enough, it's the Omarion Nebula. And Omarion is also the name of a really crappy R&B singer. So when I was watching this, I couldn't stop thinking of horrible Omarion songs in space.
That does not sound pleasant.
It was not pleasant.
But the Omarion Nebula also is home to the Great Link, which is where Odo's people hang out. And this is where we find out that Odo, in fact, is not a unique, beautiful snowflake, although we all are. But he is a member of this shape-shifting race. He basically, the Defiant gets the heck beat out of it, right? And he's like, talks to Kira, and he's like, we really should, well, there's a scene before the Defiant gets attacked where he and Kira are talking because Kira is, thinks that something's wrong with Odo. So she goes down to his quarters. He's obsessed with this nebula. He tries to convince Kira to let him go. If she's really his friend, she would let him go and basically steal a shuttle so he can go to this nebula. And Kira is pretty understanding. She's like, well, why do you need to go to this nebula? If I'm going to let you steal a shuttle, you have to have a good reason. And Odo's like, I just have a strong sense that I need to go there. And in typical Kira fashion, she's like, you're going to need a better reason than that. Which I think is perfect. But then the Defiant gets attacked. Everybody, all the bad stuff is happening. And Odo and Kira try to make their way to the bridge. They get attacked by Jem'Hadar's soldiers. Kira is knocked out. Odo takes her unconscious body and steals a shuttle.
Yes. So I thought that these battles were pretty interesting because now, like, this happened a little bit earlier, but when the Jem'Hadars were first tracking them, Sisko was like, yes, stay in warp, you know? And Tyrul was basically like, nah, I'm a Romulan, and they can, and they can track the warp signature even when you're cloaked. This was one of those rare times, I feel like, in Star Trek when a captain makes a clear decision and, like, somebody just says, no, you're wrong, you know? And like, Sisko didn't challenge it. He was like, you know what? You're Romulan. You're right.
You know more about cloaking devices than I do.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was really interesting because they could have taken that a lot of different ways in terms of the story. They could have had him try to save face and just stay with his original decision and, like, have it not work, and then he would know that, like, she was right. I thought that the way that they had him sort of immediately defer to her, even though in the rest of both episodes he was fairly strong when, like, he, like, said something and he was basically like, if I say it, like then, like, that's it. This is, like, one of those scenes where he didn't. So I found that was a key point and, like, kind of insight into his personality, that, like, he is willing to compromise if he knows that there's something that's just out of his league.
Yeah, which I think is a key component of Sisko's character. And you can imagine, like, if Captain Kirk were in that situation, I don't think he would appreciate someone disagreeing with his order.
I totally agree. Plus, he probably would have been in bed with her within a few days as well.
That's true. And I feel like if Picard were in that situation, she would feel, like, I like Picard. I think he's great. But certainly the way they portray his character, people are almost afraid of him on the Enterprise bridge, right? So I feel like she would have been so intimidated by his Picardly presence that she wouldn't even have said anything. And then they would have attacked, and then she would have said, oh, they probably, you know, detected our subspace transmission or something. And Picard would have been like, why didn't you tell me before?
Damn it.
And then she'd be like, because you're scary. but yes, and so they get basically blown up by the Jem'Hadar, although we don't know that for sure at this point. And nobody dies. Everybody's okay. Spoiler alert, Sisko and all the main characters survive these two episodes.
There was one part where you thought that O'Brien and who else went on that trip? Because they basically,
Dax.
Yeah. And Dax, because, like, they basically said, yo, we have to decloak to, like, save them. And Sisko made the decision, like, nah, we got to stay cloaked. So they kind of made you think that they might be killed.
It's true. And I thought that was an interesting scene as well, because Sisko has to, you know, make a tough decision, because that's what, so they beam down to this relay station. It's super easy for them to get to the information they're looking for, almost too easy. And then all of a sudden, this wacky shield they've never seen before goes around the relay station. They can't beam Dex and O'Brien back up. Five Jem'Hadar ships appear, and the Romulan is like, let's go, we're cloaked. We can't beam them back up. We have to decloak if we beam them back up, and if we decloak, we're going to die. And they are not, I think she calls them expendable.
Yeah. It was like very, soldier-like.
Yes. Bashir, who takes great exception to this, and he's like, we can't leave them. And Sisko, you know, he's in the captain's chair and he has to make the decision. I think it's the right decision, right? Because there are two people versus the crew, the entire complement of the Defiance. So you kind of have to say, you know what? They'll be all right. Let's yep. get the heck out of here.
Yeah,
that's what they do. And so Sisko has a lot of interesting decisions that he has to make in these two episode, this two episode series here. So let's switch to Sisko. We'll come back to Odo, because Odo does go to his home world and a bunch of stuff happens. Although, frankly, I felt like those scenes were a little boring, but.
Oh, I like them.
Should say that I didn't like the whole the arboretum scenes where he's turning into a rock and all that stuff. I was like, okay, I get the idea.
He was learning. He was getting back in touch with his shape-shiftingness.
That's right, and learning how to be a bird and
yeah.
that kind of stuff. I did like the scene where Kira is in the arboretum and she doesn't know if Odo has turned into something, so she just basically talks to everything and she's yeah, like that, creepy, walking around, talking to trees and rocks, and then she's like, all right, you're probably not even here, and she leaves. it was very funny. Anyway, so Sisko. So the first episode ends with the Defiant kind of suffering heavy damage, and Odo and Kira steal the shuttlecraft. Well, Kira doesn't steal the shuttlecraft. Yeah, Odo steals the shield.
She is knocked unconscious.
She has no say in this, and they end up on this planet, and it turns out, oh, it's Odo's homeworld. End of episode one. Episode two starts off, and so you think you're not sure what's happened with the Defiant. You're not sure what's going on with everybody. But we quickly learn that everybody survived. Dax and O'Brien are fine. Sisko and Bashir escaped on a shuttlecraft, and Dax and O'Brien somehow managed to get free, and they pick up Sisko and Bashir, and they go back to Deep Space Nine, because interesting things are happening on Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, as soon as I get to Deep Space Nine, it seems a little off. But you don't know. It's just kind of like an annoying tickle in the back of your brain as you're watching this, and it doesn't. You seem like, well, maybe things are a little wacky, but it seems okay. But as the episode progresses, it gets more and it gets stranger and stranger. I feel.
See, now did you feel this the first time that you remember watching this? Because I definitely did not. I was completely shocked by the ending the first time I saw this.
I will say that I forgot the ending. The first time, so I watched most of these episodes twice for this podcast. So I forgot the ending the first time I watched it, but I remembered who the founders were, right? So I knew they were the changelings. So I right. thought, oh, I know what's happened. The Admiral is actually a shapeshifter, and she is, manipulating everything so that they'll sign this really bad treaty and everything's happening. But that's not what happened, in fact, because there's a big shocking twist, which I'll just spoil now, because you're listening to this episode of Random Trek, so you've already seen this episode. It turns out, and this, I don't know how I feel about this ending as well, so let's talk about that. That, in fact, Dax, O'Brien, Sisko, the Romulan, who else? Is that it? Bashir, were captured by the Dominion, brought to the same planet that Kira and Odo were on, and basically, every scene that we've seen set in Deep Space Nine in this episode is like a simulation that they're running in the minds of their captors to see how they would react to the Dominion coming into the Alpha Quadrant.
Right.
And how hard would they fight, basically? They're doing a little simulation here to see, run the numbers, basically. And my problem, I think it's a clever idea, but I always feel like, and this is, I feel like a trope in Star Trek that is annoying, that there are these episodes where these interesting things happen, and then at the end of it you find out, oh, none of that actually really happened. And never mind.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, like people always talk about that being a very convenient way, and it has its pros and cons. But I do think it was done pretty well here.
Yes.
I think that, you know, like when you think about the Dominion at this point in Star Trek, you think of them as just that they wouldn't do something this kind of devious and non-combative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you kind of thought of them as like just like this. Well, I thought of them as this kind of big, brutish, like war focused mm-hmm. group that like just want to go in and dominate. So the fact that they're taking this psychological approach, and the fact that like they were that the founders were like this formerly persecuted group, you know, and like I thought that. I forgot what her name was, like the female changeling, but I thought that the speech that she gave, kind of giving like the reasons why they do what they do, was just awesome in terms of like bring order to the chaos of the galaxy. And if a couple people die, like, so what? You know,
They're just solids.
Yeah, I just thought that the way that she delivered that in like kind of like this like monotone voice, and you might think that like monotone is kind of bad, but I think in like this case it fits really well, because her character is really sort of like, just I guess the closest that like you can get to kind of a Spock like character, just mm-hmm. like cold logic and just, well, like this makes sense, so we're gonna do this.
Right. And her, so the, I think the comparing her to Spock is an apt comparison. Although Spock comes to his kind of cold, emotionless viewpoint because he wants to master his emotions, right? And he wants to, it's coming out of a place of self-improvement, where I feel like the changelings, the shapeshifters, have this same thing, but it's because so many people have hurt them before.
Yes.
And that they want, they're just shutting down, and they're like, no one's going to hurt us anymore. We are going to be in control. We're going to make sure that these solids stay in line. And we're going to basically hurt them before they hurt us.
Yeah. And I thought it was an interesting juxtaposition to see Odo earlier in the first episode, kind of responding with the anger and the frustration, and then when you look at, you know, his like entire race of like people, the way that they responded with just like a very cold and calculating, kind of calmly delivered, you know, murder squad, basically.
they do have, but everyone is part of the murder squad. That's the great thing. It's all the link. They share everything together. And that's let's shift back to, I know we're jumping all over the place, but there's so much stuff that happens in these two episodes, and so to continue the tragic nature of Odo, right? He finally finds his people. There's this great link. He joins with the leader changeling, who I don't know if she even had a name, because I don't know if they have names.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember a name, and like I literally just rewatched this today.
I don't think
she had a name.
I think that they are beyond names, because they're all one and part of the Great Link and all that jazz. And so there are, what, I think 4 or 5 of the shapeshifters come out of the Great Link to talk to Odo. And she wants to join with him. And one of the other changelings is like, he's not ready. And she's like, well, we have to do this. And so Odo experiences joining with another changeling for the first time, and it is clear that it is a quite pleasant experience.
Freaky.
Yes, it is quite freaky. They kind of liquefy and join as one, and they do it again later. And it also, every time I watch these episodes with that are Odo heavy and lots of shapeshifting, I think, they're never going to make these Blu-rays, because they're going to have to redo all of this. and it's going to be too expensive, and it makes me sad. But maybe they will. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm saying, I mean, maybe J.J. Abrams can, like, foot some of the bill for redoing that stuff.
Yeah, he's got a lot of Star Wars money that he could pony in. So, you know, it's clear that Odo wants to join the Link, right? Because it's where he is, right? It's his part of him. And it was a part of him that he didn't know was missing until he found out what it was, right? And then he's got this aching hole where the Link should be, and he wants to join his people. But they don't want to let him in because he's been gone for 300 years and he's not ready for it. And then throughout the course, he finds Kira and he finds behind this door that they have, you know, captured all his friends and are running the simulation and basically want to kill them all because they can't let them go back and tell the Alpha Quadrant who the actual founders are.
Right.
Or where they are. And Odo is like, you can't do that. These are my friends. She's like, what? They're just solids. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, silly solids.
That's right. Who cares? It's a couple solids. You can join the Link. It'll all be fine. And so this puts this makes Odo even more tragic, right? Because he has to reject his own people and find out that the thing that he's been looking for all his life isn't really all it's cracked up to be. And they are, in fact, like you said, a giant murder squad.
Yeah, a big murder squad.
And that's not cool. And that does not jive with Odo's very strict sense of moral character, right? And so he basically says, you're going to have to kill me too if you're going to kill all of them. And the changelings are like, what? Changeling on changeling violence hasn't happened in forever. So we'll let you go. And so they leave.
Yeah, I thought it was really powerful when he said that you have to do to me whatever you do to them. I thought that's the kind of stuff that makes me love Odo, you know, because he's basically like, you know, like their fate is mine, like this is my crew, you know. I thought that like that was pretty dope.
Yes, and I like the her last line, which I'm looking at Memory Alpha, but I did remember this. She says, the founder lady says to Odo, "We will miss you, Odo, but you will miss us even more."
Yes,
which is a very chilling last line, right?
Yeah, 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 and yeah. I mean, because there's like that line, and there's a line where she basically says, "You know, like we'll go to the Alpha Quadrant when the time is right."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just check you guys out, say hi, you know, maybe bring over like a rhubarb pie.
But is it a rhubarb pie? You'll never know.
You'll never know until it's too late.
That's right. Yeah, they're very calculating. They're playing the long game. They're okay with it. And so I think that the end of this episode. So as I was watching this episode, I thought, oh, it's not. Well, of course, I knew what was going to happen at the end, so I knew it wasn't going to be a happy ending. But you think, oh, Odo's finally found his people. Maybe he'll find some peace. And at the end of it, he's an even more tragic character because he has to reject his own people, and now he knows for certain that he is part that he has a home, but he has to, of his own volition, choose not to go there because they're not cool, basically. I mean, that's underplaying a little bit, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think his decision wasn't easy, but it was definitely I didn't get the sense that he struggled a lot with the decision. Like, he saw what the hell they were doing and found out that they were, you know, the Dominion founders. I don't think that he had this huge struggle between, oh my God, do I go with my evil family or, you know, or these nice people? I think that he like decided pretty quickly.
He did. But that's still, this tension between Odo and his alliances with the characters that we all know and love, and his alliance to his own people is something that they play up a lot throughout the coming seasons, with great effect. With when Wei Yun shows up and treats Odo as a founder and does everything Odo tells him to do, and that's a very interesting relationship. So they have a lot of fun with that, and just makes Odo even more fascinating as a character, I think.
Right.
So is there anything else in these episodes that has happened that we should talk about? Sisko. We could talk about Sisko and his reaction to the basically the simulation that they're running. We kind of touched on that, but we really didn't get into it.
Yeah, if there's a problem I had with the ending, I did think that they got out of the simulation and they were just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, and
then Romulan, like, has the thing, last thing I remember was I was being killed by a Geminar soldier.
Yeah, exactly. And then Odo is basically like, let us go. And then the changing's like, okay. I love the idea of the simulation, but I thought that they handled that ending part a little sloppily. I wish that they at least had to, it didn't have to be a huge fight, but like at least show that they have to get away from this, not just walk away. And I know that they're trying to set them up as this huge threat for the later seasons, but I don't know. I felt like, wouldn't you want to harm someone that, you know, or like, at least bring them in and like put them into your prison or something.
That's right. Or give them a good old, two-handed punch to the face or something.
Yeah. 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 So like that seemed a little weird that like they were basically like, okay, you cause all this damage and destruction. Okay. Bye. See you later. It was just kind of weird.
we'll take our beat up ship and go. Of course they were vastly outnumbered. So I don't think they had much choice. They were like, okay, well, let's just get while the getting's good before they change their mind and we'll get out of here. And we could talk about the horrific simulation that we all went through later.
During
the simulation, basically everything bad that could happen is happening. Sisko comes back. He finds out the Federation is engaged in treaty negotiations with the Dominion, but the Dominion, for some reason, has decided that the Romulans shouldn't be involved, but the Cardassians should be, and so the Romulans are upset, and they're going to start a war if the treaty is signed without them.
Right.
And this admiral is says, "Oh, you know," Sisko's like, "I need to be involved, tell me what's happening," and the admiral's like, "Well, you can't really be involved." The Jemadar are like beating up O'Brien without any consequences and shooting the Romulan lady in the promenade. Bad stuff is happening. Garak dies. It's no good. When Garak died, I knew, okay, this is not actually happening.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I still wasn't. I mean, I figured that like they would have some way to bring them back or something, but yeah, I don't know. I maybe I was just naive when I was first watching this, but I was definitely like, "Wow, this is a hell of a season premiere."
That's true, and to be fair, they never said at the moment Garak gets shot, but it isn't clear if he's going to die. He just can't continue the mission. So basically, Sisko and friends decide that they need to steal a shuttlecraft or a runabout, I suppose. And collapse the wormhole because they think something's fishy is happening.
I also thought this was kind of weird that they seemed like they were pretty close to the wormhole and they shot these photon torpedoes in there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably would have decimated all of them, I would have thought. So it seemed kind of weird that like they were like, yeah, let's get it so it's nice and big on your view screen. Okay, now let's destroy it.
And also, it seemed pretty easy to destroy the wormhole. You know, it just take what, 3 or 4 photon torpedoes, and you've collapsed the giant wormhole. Now, I don't know much about wormholes, but that just seems like a little too easy.
Yeah. I don't know. I can understand it. I just thought that like that was kind of weird.
They should have done it from a safe distance, is what you're saying.
Yes, they definitely should have done it from a safe distance.
Well, as watching many episodes of Star Trek, with a critical eye for this podcast, I can confirm that Starfleet has no OSHA equivalent. So they're, you know, they don't care about workplace safety whatsoever.
Sue them.
That's right.
Shoot their pants off.
Well, I think that we have reached the end of our discussion. So let me ask the customary end of episode question to you, Sharif.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy this 2-episode season opener of Deep Space Nine?
I definitely did. I think that this is, you know, this was one of those episodes that got me rehooked into the series. I thought that, you know, between sort of like the visual spectacle of it, they also did like a great job with, you know, with the actual stories in it. And like this, these two episodes are kind of what Trek is all about to me, you know? So I definitely think that is a great episode.
Yeah. And I think that these, like you said, this is kind of the best of what Trek does in that it is telling two stories at the same time, a kind of a deeply personal story with Odo and his character journey, and then this big kind of sweeping space opera with, you know, the Dominion coming into the Alpha Quadrant and all these factions not being happy about it, and does both effectively, which is a difficult thing to do. So kudos to them. And Jonathan Frakes directed the second part, so good job, Jonathan Frakes.
Good job, John. Props to you.
That's right. Good job, number one. Next on Random Trek, The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 22, Symbiosis. Symbiosis.